Hi everyone, welcome along to this morning's session. Looking around, and I've sort of had a walk around and spoken to a few people, everyone looks in remarkably good nick, so well done for an early morning start after Tech Fest. My name's Scott Fordham, I'm local pre-sales guy for Citrix based in Wellington. With me speaking today is Gavin Bennett. Today we're talking about CVS, so Citrix Validated Solutions. And it's really an architectural framework and set of collateral that we've built. And the reason we've built it is that, I guess over the last 18 months to 2 years, we've seen the cost of desktop virtualization, application virtualization, being driven downwards from, really brought about by the density of compute or the density of workload we can apply to our hosting infrastructure. What Citrix wanted to do was then create, I think, a set of frameworks and artifacts to assist our customers and partners in being able to build out and kind of realize the potential of this high-density compute. So we wanted to create collateral that was sort of allowed you to achieve that quickly and simply and in a very predictable manner. So we'll step through that today and we'll have a look at a lot of the characteristics of what we're calling CVS, some of the testing that we've done. So it's all been driven out of ANZ. We've built the infrastructure within our data center in Sydney, and that's where we've done all the testing and analytics. And from there, we've been able to build out a whole bunch of different items of collateral, which we'll show you at the end of the session, around solution design, deployment guides, bills of material, sample bills of material, and probably, and almost from my perspective, the most interesting part is some cost modeling calculators. So sort of allowing us to go into desktop virtualization initiatives, I think fully informed about how they're going to scale, how they're going to perform, and what the cost impact will be sort of up front. So today's session, and you can see the agenda there, we'll run through some quick introductions. We're going to do an overview of Flexcast. I find at TechEd there's sort of varying degrees of Citrix exposure and knowledge, so there's people in this room that I know more about Citrix than I do, and there's other people that potentially don't. So we'll sort of go for some broad brushstrokes to start with. Gav's going to talk about sort of Flexcast and some of our, I guess, concepts and frameworks. Then we'll get into the CVS overview, its methodology. We'll look at the pod-based architecture and how that scales. And then we'll, I guess, get to the money section and look at density and cost analysis. Time permitting, obviously, we'll do a bit of a QA at the end. And also, I'm hoping we have time. I'll sort of run through one of the cost modeling spreadsheets that we've built just to have a look at how you can run your own sort of analysis. We have several different models of CVS or reference architectures for CVS for different scenarios. The scenario that we're going to talk about today is primarily focused on low-cost desktop virtualization. So an entry point that is really simple in terms of its architecture, quick to deploy, and as I mentioned before, very linear in the way that it scales. So that's using Cisco C-Series blades. And I might hand over to... Oh, no, we swapped this around. So I'm going to introduce Gavin, and then Gavin's going to introduce me. So Gavin's been at Citrix for 7 years. He's based here in Auckland. I'd imagine more of you know him than know me. According to LinkedIn, Gavin attended the Universiteit van Zuid-Afrika. Is that how you say it?
It's pretty close.
Pretty close. What it doesn't say on LinkedIn is that Gavin is a massive Jennifer Lawrence fan. And Gav actually asked me to take this opportunity this morning to apologize on behalf of himself for the internet outages over the weekend. He was putting together a fan club type newsletter, and that's why he was downloading those images. So perfectly innocent, but I just wanted to say sorry on behalf of Gavin.
Thanks, Scott. That's well appreciated. So, all right, now's my turn. So Scott, as he mentioned, is based in Wellington, been at Citrix for 4 years, so sort of a newbie. Bit of a sports freak. We have quite a lot of banter on a Monday morning around, various sport that happens on the weekend. Talking about iCloud, it's quite funny what sort of content you can find by hacking into someone's iCloud account. So when you were in the UK, you must have been pretty moved by the whole Dai tragedy. Anyway, so enough of the warming up. So this is, as Scott mentioned, we're going to do a little bit of a high-level overview around FlexCast. So before we start, can I just sort of get a show of hands? Who is a current ZenApp or Zen Desktop customer in the room? Oh, cool. So the session's going to be quite short. All right. So a lot of customers talk to us about, you know, why, what is it that we do? You know, come and talk to us about, you know, your new ZenApp version or your new, you know, published application stuff. So we like to talk about, you know, what we do as ZenApp and Zen Desktop is around more than just delivering published apps or published desktops. It's, you know, we've got a varying degree of different ways in which we can deliver desktops. So we won't talk about those two in the yellow box or green or whatever color it appears to you, but we won't talk about those two because we'll go into that in more detail. But effectively, these five different blue objects are different ways at which, using Zen Desktop, we can deliver a remote Windows session. So the, on the far right, the remote PC option is basically allowing us to use the Citrix infrastructure to connect back to physical desktop PCs. So a lot of customers have started using Zen Desktop just purely for remote access, not necessarily into a virtual desktop, but just back to users' physical PCs that are sitting on their desk. So we've actually got a couple of companies that roll out the Citrix agent as part of their corporate image. So every Windows machine that gets built, whether it's a PC or a laptop, gets built with a Citrix agent in the image so that you can add, you know, give users remote access to their desktop sessions. And the two on the left-hand side are more around client execution, so using physical endpoint machines to run virtual desktops, so to speak. So the streamed VHD option allows us to use our provisioning server technology, which is one of our image management solutions, to stream out and execute on a physical endpoint, whether it be a desktop or a server, a running Windows workload. So you can stream a Windows image down to a device, have that device execute Windows local. So it's effectively running a diskless PC of a specific Windows image. We can do that across desktops and servers. And that target device can obviously be a physical or a virtual machine. And then on the far left, the Zen Client option, that's our client hypervisor, where we effectively take this model to the next level and allow you to run that virtual machine totally offline, still under management from the corporate environment. So you can patch and update your Windows image and deliver that to, you know, a Windows or a Mac laptop and have that run offline still as a controlled corporate image. So delving into those two, I know there's a lot of text and little graphics on this board, but effectively what we're trying to highlight here is the difference between a hosted shared desktop and a hosted virtual desktop, or VDI. So this is effectively what we're going to spend the next part of the session talking about. So these are two Windows desktop delivery methods that allow you to deliver, you know, a Windows desktop to a user in two different methods. You either do remote desktop or, you know, terminal services based server hosted sessions or individual Windows 7, Windows 8, Windows 8.1 VMs to users. Obviously, as you'll see later, the density of each of those operating systems is what effectively comes down to your cost. So this is a slide that just sort of highlights, well, it's actually a reminder to remind you to come to tomorrow's session next door, actually. So we've got a session tomorrow morning talking a little bit about Zen Desktop and cloud provisioning. So being able to provision workloads into public clouds, and then there's other stuff we'll talk about tomorrow, which allows us to use public cloud infrastructure as the management for some Citrix stuff. So that's some of the new stuff we'll talk about tomorrow. So Zen Desktop 7.x is our sort of unified foundation for delivering Windows apps and desktops from any operating system. So for those of you who've got, you know, old-fashioned Citrix presentation server or ZenApp environments, think of adding XP or Windows 7 into that farm and being able to use that operating system to deliver out Windows applications. So with a Zen Desktop 7 environment, you effectively have a bunch of different infrastructure components. So we have these controllers, which are effectively the farm management servers, for want of a better phrase. So, you know, these are Server 2008 R2 or above servers that control which published resources you make available to which users. With a traditional Zen app license, you basically have the ability to publish desktops and apps off of server operating systems. What a Zen desktop license adds to the ability is to do Windows desktops. So if you had, you know, old-fashioned XP or Windows Vista images that you wanted to deliver out to users, you could use that from the same core foundation. So there's a little asterisk on the bottom, which we can't talk about at this event, but we basically have a beta for a Linux VDA where you can deliver, you know, remote sessions using the same Citrix infrastructure. We'll cover that pretty quickly. So so Windows, you know, any Windows application that you can run on, you know, XP to 2008 R2, you can now publish and deliver from a Zen Desktop 7 environment. Probably the key thing to note is, you know, the look and feel, whether it's a server-based desktop or a VDI-based desktop, is exactly the same. So if you're delivering a Windows 7 virtual desktop or a 2008 R2 remote desktop-based session to a user, the user has no idea which one's Windows 7. They understand Windows 7 because that's what they use, and if you want to deliver a Windows 8 desktop, the server operating system will obviously be Server 2012. So a lot of customers say, well, you know, why do I want to do all this virtual desktop stuff? Why don't I just keep replacing physical PCs with new physical PCs or with laptops? And, you know, in some cases, that's a pretty valid solution. But there are so many customers that we work with over the past few years that have found the benefit of doing desktop virtualization. I mean, specifically this session here, we're going to talk around why just repeat what you've done before. So when you roll out, you know, when your hardware comes out for refresh, and why just roll out a new piece of hardware if you can roll out a virtual instance of the same Windows environment and give you all this additional functionality? So the fact that, you know, BCP built into the solution, you know, we can talk about all these sort of marketing use cases till the cows come home, but, you know, there's a lot of benefit in delivering virtual applications and desktop sessions to users. So enough of the sort of Citrix marketing stuff. We'll get Scott to start talking about some of the hardcore technical detail.
Thanks, Gav. Okay, so the next stuff that we're going to go through, I think we're going to talk a little bit about the, it's not actually that hardcore technical, we're going to talk about sort of the value prop of CVS, you know, why we think it's important and really why we've brought it to market to, as I said, assist our customers and partners in deploying desktop and application virtualization platforms. And we're sort of, I think for this particular type of CVS, this low-cost entry point to desktop virtualization, we've come up with these five pillars around the value prop. So the first there being user experience, and that's really just about making sure that as we build and scale these environments, the user experience is entirely consistent and predictable. You know, we've seen challenges in the past of that sort of the hidden bit under the iceberg when you start scaling out, where user experience just kind of implodes upon itself. So we want an architecture that will achieve that level of predictability. We want it to be cheaper, obviously. So that's why we're using the more, I guess, low-end rack-mounted servers for this. Key part of the solution as well is that all of the storage is locally attached. So we're not leveraging any sort of enterprise or direct attached storage. There's no requirements for SAN, anything like that. That's been a key part of keeping that cost point down. And the reason we've been able to do that quite effectively and still maintain a good user experience is using Hyper-V as the hosting hypervisor and storage spaces, and the ability to build out disk pools and tears within those pools of sort of hard disk and solid state disk. So sort of a highly optimized hybrid approach to, I guess, delivering the IOPS for the environment. Fast and simple has been another key part. So really just we wanted to provide almost a cookie cutter approach to how you might build out a virtual desktop and application platform. We wanted to have, you know, repeatable reference architecture so that if you follow our steps, you can deliver this quite quickly. Scalable is really important as well. So we wanted it to be really the idea of being able to start small and grow fast. And that's why it's pod-based. So I think we'll get into it a little bit more when Gavin's talking, but just the idea that just by within CVS, this architecture that we're talking about, if you just deploy two server nodes, you're going to have your entire control fabric for the site in place, and you'll also get about 200 to 300 virtual desktop workloads from just two server nodes. Probably tying in with that as well, the cheaper piece, those two server nodes, obviously, I guess, lower-end compute, about $15,000 New Zealand dollars a server, so quite cost-effective. But we'll look at the pricing in more detail as we go through. And then finally, low risk. And that's almost the most important part to me, because any of us who have been involved in desktop and application virtualization stuff in the past have probably ground our gears for extensive amounts of time perhaps as we're scaling the environment, or looking at, you know, what the cost of the compute would be, have we spec'd it right, all that kind of stuff. We want to take away that risk. And we take away that risk really by, and we'll see it as we go through, the analytics that we've run with Logan VSI in terms of generating synthetic workload that's realistic and real world on our hosting servers. I sort of, one example I give around the low risk thing is vendors often make density claims against their compute, and often the idea is to sell their platform, which makes sense. And I was reading a reference architecture about 4 years ago, maybe 5 years ago, from a hardware vendor, and I was reading through it, and they said they were getting 200 virtual desktop sessions on a hosting server. And I thought, well, this is absolutely game-changing. I need to tell everyone about this. This is, you know, there is formidable workload density for 5 years ago. And I kept reading through the reference architecture and kind of got to the small print, and it was a Windows XP virtual desktop with 500 meg of memory, launching and closing Notepad. And so that was their synthesized workload. A little bit problematic, and I'd suggest not particularly real world. So we wanted to do something that kind of took the risk of those types of claims away and modeled something very realistic. This next chart is a little bit of a marketing one. And fortunately, we've got some of the metrics to back this as we go through the presentation, but it sort of just sets the scene. A lot of what is driving CBS and some of the cost analysis is the price of refreshing physical hardware at the endpoint. And what we've seen is sort of this paradigm shift as we've been able to, I guess, increase the density of compute. Really, more or less over the last 18 months, we've seen the cost of a virtual desktop drive down to be significantly less than the physical fleet refresh. So that's what's driving us. So Citrix, 5 years ago, 4 years ago, we really had to talk about total value of ownership and do a lot of marketing around what a fabulous user experience, how we're enabling our workforce, how everybody would want to work for you the same way they want to work for Google, because it's so fantastic that you've got a virtual desktop. Now, in the last 18 months, our conversations have really been able to switch over to TCO, which is probably the most important part of the equation, and we'll quantify that as we go through. So that, I guess, crossing of the swords on the graph is a kind of a Moore's Law type thing, you know, this increased density of compute that we're able to achieve. What I wanted to do here, just to illustrate the point a little bit, is I went away and reviewed one of our original CVS reference architectures from 18 months ago, and I compared it with the reference architecture that we're going to discuss today. And I found some of the outcomes there very interesting. So this particular one was for, I guess, Zenap-based hosted shared virtual desktops, and it was for 1,000 users. And you can see here as we step through it in this middle column, one virtual Zenap instance had two virtual CPUs, 8 gig of memory. We were getting 12 VMs on the host. We were only getting 11 sessions per virtual Zenap instance, and we were getting 132 virtual desktops executing on the host. To support our 1,000-user environment, we needed 85 virtual Zenap instances, and you can see the price point there that we had modeled at the time. That's in New Zealand dollars. Switching forward to today, you can see just the impact of being able to have much higher density compute has driven certainly down the cost and up the densities. So we're able to deliver a lot more user sessions, 180 virtual desktop sessions, on the same price piece of tin, obviously differently spec'd, and we're also deploying fewer Zenap instances, so we're reducing a licensing and a management overhead there as well. I mentioned before there's several flavors of CVS, so I just wanted to touch on that quickly so that you guys are aware more than anything else. Today, like I said, we're focusing on the entry-level CVS, and you've got to be conscious with different CVS models, we address different use cases, and I'm not sure how legible the slide is particularly, but really all we're really saying here is that this entry-level CVS is stateless, non-persistent virtual desktops because of the way we're trying to abstract ourselves from, I guess, the storage overhead to some degree. We do have CVS options for persistent virtual desktop type scenarios where we've worked with Nutanix. We've also got options around NetApp storage as well. The other thing, and I don't think we're particularly precious about this, I've done modeling for, or price modeling for other hardware types. It's just that they're not part of CVS yet. But I think effectively, if you come to understand the reference architectures, you can pull out, you know, one particular hosting hardware platform, and as long as you spec the replacement platform in a similar or more powerful way, there's a lot of flexibility there as well. The bits I obviously wouldn't change are the Citrix piece, because I'm, that would be awful, and I'd lose my job for suggesting it. And I also wouldn't change the Hyper-V piece, because we're at TechEd, and it would be like going to someone's house and criticizing their wife for their cooking. So, but truthfully, I wouldn't change that either, because across Citrix globally, we're getting our highest density compute on the Hyper-V hypervisor. So I think we're tracking at about 15 to 20% better densities on Hyper-V. Combined with that, what we're able to achieve with storage spaces to drive the cost of the solution down does make it quite compelling. So we've thrown around, I guess, a few indicative figures and things like that. I think it's really important to understand, I guess, some of the assumptions that we've made as we've built out these numbers and this cost modeling. And we sort of step you up through a stack here in terms of the modeling assumptions. So we start off with our hardware, then there's the Microsoft piece, the Citrix piece, networking, and client device. So we'll talk through those. In some of the charts that Gav's going to show, we've actually broken it right down so that you can see who contributes what in terms of the, I guess, the TCO or the cost per virtual desktop, and that's quite interesting. So at the storage and hypervisor or hardware layer, we've obviously got the Cisco C-Series rack-mounted servers. We've got 3 years' worth of support on those. That's factored in. We've also got our local storage, so our SSD and hard disk storage. We've got our Microsoft operating system licensing, so we've got our core stuff there. We've got 3 years' SA on that. We've got RDS CALs. We've got VDA licensing for the VDI workloads that we model. We haven't included SQL Server licensing. We've assumed that, you know, there's a pre-existing SQL infrastructure within the organization. On the cost modeling spreadsheet, though, we can factor that in. So if you want to factor in SQL, then you can just, you know, there's almost a tick box when you put in the number of licenses you want to consume. Citrix piece, we've modeled it around Zen Desktop Enterprise, which I don't think there are any Citrix sales guys in the room, but it sort of has brought a tear to their eyes a little bit because obviously they're out there trying to sell Platinum, but we've modeled it on Enterprise. So we're probably working at cross-purposes with them a little bit. We've modeled 3 years subscription advantage. So really the prices that you'll see are for a virtual desktop over 3 years, not a single year. There's nothing sort of hidden in terms of SA or renewals in particular there. Around the networking, we've assumed this 1 gig switching fabric is pre-existing. But again, we've also factored in the ability to add some Cisco switching if needs be. Client devices, we've almost made no assumptions, so we've just sort of left that blank. And that's really because it's too difficult for us to model. There's so many different options you could take in terms of what you might want to do at the endpoint. We've left that alone. So with the figures that Gav's going to show you, I guess just be cognizant that you're going to have to add that price in on top of it as well. So that really just steps us through what we include and what we exclude. Going to have a little bit of a look at the methodology now, and that's really the Login VSI toolset. I'd be interested, many people in the room use Login VSI and the VSI Max stuff? Okay, phew. So that, I think that's kind of becoming an industry standard for generating synthetic workload for testing purposes. And it's really interesting what they're doing. They have three workloads, a light, medium, and heavy. There's a lot of argument about what is comprised within those workloads and how they may skew the results. And I think that's an important argument to understand, but what overwhelms that is that it's standards-based. So the Login VSI toolset is something that Citrix use, that Cisco use, HP are using it. I think there are other vendors using it. So what we get when we look at Login VSI metrics is something that's comparable, you know, across different platforms, so that we know that if someone's talking Login VSI and that's how they've done their workload testing and they're using the medium workload that we are, then we've sort of got apples for apples. So that's important. There's a lot of information on this slide and I'm not going to go through all of it, but this effectively just outlines what the workload is, and you guys will have access to these slides later on so you can see exactly what happens here. But the medium workload effectively runs for 12 minutes. There's a bunch of Office applications that are launching and executing and typing and doing stuff within that time. And then at the end of the 12 minutes, all the documents that are created get zipped up and I think attempted to email off. Then we loop again. So we loop four times, 48 minutes overall to test the workload. The medium workload, in my opinion, is actually really heavy. Any of us who are familiar with Citrix environments from the past, we're probably running at about 40% of sessions within XenApp, for example, are active. And that's actually a farm running quite hard. Login VSI try to get that up to about 80%. So in my opinion, their medium is pretty heavy. I think it also skews things unfavorably for XenApp-based workloads. But if you want to talk about that, let's catch up at the stand and we can dig into more detail. I've also left that blog article which talks to that too. One other piece I wanted to talk about on Login VSI is really just because I had a phone conversation last night from a guy that I know. They're rolling out a 1,000-seat VDI environment for a customer at the moment. And I thought his use case was really interesting. So we use it to get density metrics so that we can come to guys like you and kind of build a costing construct. What they've used it for is that. So they did some initial density stuff so they knew how the environment would scale. But then prior to rollout, they put Login VSI launches at each of the main sites for this 1,000 virtual desktop customer. And they ran synthetic workloads across the sites. And what that exposed to them is that they'd run out of DHCP addresses that they could use within their scope. So this is prior to rolling out. They went and did this, I guess, as a pre-pilot step. I thought this was really smart. So exposed, they'd run out of DHCP addresses because they thrashed the environment via these launches. It also exposed that some of the firewall ports that they needed open for certain sites weren't open because the workloads couldn't execute properly. So I thought that was really, really an interesting use case. So I thought I'd just drop that in. Within the design architecture that we've produced for CVS, we've got a solutions design and a deployment guide. And I should have got them out of my bag. There's probably about 250, 300 pages of documentation, and it's quite detailed, which is really good. So we've got the PowerShell scripts that you'll need to build out your storage pools and things like that. And we use this layered approach to the architecture. So we define requirements and design pieces for, obviously, the network layer, compute, storage, hypervisor, control and access, desktop, and user. And so I just wanted to drill into a couple of the layers very quickly now, particularly the hypervisor, but we'll also look at sort of our desktop layer a little bit as well. So hypervisor layer, obviously we have our Cisco C240 rack-mounted server. Within the server, we install two hard drives, and they're RAID 1, and that's really just where server 2012 core will reside. The secret source, kind of, is the additional four hard drives that, or disks that we install, two hard disk drives, two solid-state disks. And that's where we use the storage spaces, and we create some tearing across those disks. And you can see there the sizes of each. So really the solid-state piece is for that, all your hot data. And then what Storage Spaces does is effectively manage that, so when it believes that that data starts to cool, then it moves it onto the hard disk for you. So you kind of get the optimal effect for a cheaper price. We have two CPUs with 10 cores each, and we have obviously our memory. Now the interesting piece to note, and I think Gav will touch on this as well, is that we use more memory for a server that's hosting VDI workloads than we do for RDS. So what you'll find in the modeling is that we get 20% better density for RDS or XenApp workloads, but it's 34% more expensive. That's kind of the reason. We've had to put more memory in for VDI because there's a different choke point. We've got four NICs, and they're basically split into two teams. One is for management and migration, and the other is for straight network traffic. And I think, last slide. Desktop layer, and we can cover this pretty quickly. The architecture talks about a single Xen desktop site. So Xen desktop and the architectures associated with it are really site-based. So a site is a geographic location. So we deploy a single site within the architectures. You would really just replicate that if you had an additional site, rename it accordingly. Dual delivery controllers. So at the controller fabric piece, we have two of each, and they sit across different hosts. So it's two nodes to deploy that control fabric. And we have a catalog or a machine catalog that is basically tethered to each physical host. And that's because we use MCS, which is Machine Creation Services. That's our disk management technology for this use case, because we didn't want to use PVS because it adds a little bit of complexity and a little bit more cost. We wanted to use something very simple. So we've used MCS, which is really a sort of a linked clone type technology, but to manage that best, you want to tie your catalogs that MCS is executing against specifically to the host. And I'll hand over to Gav. He's going to talk in a bit more detail about storage spaces.
So just before I carry on, can I just see a show of hands? Who's currently using Hyper-V 2012? R2? Cool. So this is a little bit of a Microsoft pitch, funnily enough. So the reason we chose this platform, as Scott mentioned, you know, there's some pretty cool technology built into, you know, Hyper-V. So we use Core Server for this deployment method. And the key reason we use Hyper-V R2 is the storage spaces option. So this slide is left in here just effectively so you can use this later. But we've got all these PowerShell scripts. Probably something to make clear that I don't even think we do during the session, to be fair, is all of this material is freely available. So all you need to do is come and see us or harass us over the next few days, and we'll share all this documentation with you. So this is freely available information that we can give to you guys that you can copy and paste or, you know, change the logo and make it your own. There is a typo in one of these PowerShell scripts, and there's a free bottle of wine if anyone can find it. But I'll change slides quickly. We'll fix the typo before you.
But honestly, I think that's fair. If the first person to spot it, we'll buy you a bottle of wine.
Will you?
Okay. Yeah, I will. Cool. I'm from Wellington. I'm not tight like you guys.
Okay.
That's a good way to basically isolate everyone in the room.
It's going to be a long week. So basically, you know, we kind of touched on this already, right? So the storage spaces is some pretty cool technology. So I don't want to, you know, misuse vendor terms, but, you know, Nutanix is a pretty awesome platform. And if you can make something similar, you know, using DIY bits, that effectively gives you, you know, a pretty good alternative option. So we'll delve into a little bit about this pod architecture and kind of how these bits fit together for the solution. So we went, you know, Scott's sort of spoken about login VSI. So the key thing to note is obviously you need to know how many users you're going to get per server. That's, you know, the question that any Citrix person gets asked the first meeting is, you know, how many users per session or how many users per server. So that's effectively what this does. So you run through the VSI login, you get your idea of how much resource is required for the specific types of servers, you know, hardware specs that you're going to be purchasing, and it's pretty straightforward. So you establish your baseline of how many users you're going to get per server, and you know it's, you know, once you've added your infrastructure and a couple of sessions to that host, you literally just bolt on more servers into the environment to increase your additional server capacity. So it is pretty much that simple. So when we start off, we have two nodes. So we start installing all of the sort of core infrastructure. So we're assuming you're going to have an existing AD deployment and, as Scott mentioned, an existing SQL environment. So from here on in, you install, you know, the relevant Citrix bits on, you know, server one and server two, so you've got redundancy as far as hardware platforms go. And with the additional capacity that you've got on each server, you allow for some, you know, user sessions. So depending on your workloads and the scripts that we've got, give you between, you know, 100 to 150 user sessions on each server. So two servers, that's an extra, you know, what, 200 to 300 users using two of these servers. Then if you have 400 or 500 or 1,000 users, it's just a matter of bolting on more servers and using those servers just purely to host user sessions. I mean, if you wanted to be, you know, uber paranoid, you could create a third set of infrastructure on a separate host. So you could keep bolting on host infrastructure, back-end required infrastructure if you wished, but in this instance, we're just adding on user sessions. So it's a pretty granular approach to add new users, and you know what the costs are. So for the next 300 users to be added into the environment, it's going to cost you this much money because that's what two servers cost you, for example. So the workload that we used in this environment, so the hosted shared or the RDS server, we use server 2008 R2, 8V CPUs, 16 gig of RAM and 100 gig OS. And for the Windows 7, we used 2V CPUs and 2.5 gig of RAM. So these were the machine configs that we used to run against all of our VSI logon testing. This is what Scott mentioned earlier. So option one gave us 180 users per server node with just remote desktop sessions hosted, and that server only had 128 gig of RAM. We got less users using VDI with a few more memory. So the cost, as you'll see later, is pretty relevant between these two different workloads. This has to do with, you know, the fact that you're running individual Windows sessions per user or individual Windows machines per user versus sharing an operating system, you know, using RDS, which is pretty efficient as far as sharing CPU and RAM for multiple users. So here's the money, nearly the money slot. So as I kind of touched on before, you know, so we start with two servers. This is what the infrastructure costs. It's going to host this many users, and as you need more, you just bolt on. So, you know, two servers, we were getting 200 users in VDI, you know, and we just bolt on additional capacity as we require. With a remote desktop server, the same servers, you know, less memory in each host, we were actually getting more users per server nodes. So again, this all comes into the cost factoring. So I'll just blank the screen. So before I show you the numbers, as you might have seen already, we've done a lot of work in Australia. So as Scott mentioned, we've done all this work in Sydney. So our consulting guys have spent, you know, for practically the last 18 months building these various CVS solutions. So all of the material that you read will be based on Australian dollar numbers. So we've obviously Kiwi-fied it a little bit and made it, you know, more New Zealand friendly. We've worked with the local distributors. We've got local costs for everything. You know, all of those costs that we have included, all the Microsoft stuff, all the Citrix stuff, all the hardware. It's including 3 years licensing. So the cost that you'll see here is per user for 3 years, not per user per year for 3 years. It's a one-off cost for 3 years. So we've worked with a couple of partners to get a rough idea of what integration costs would be. So, you know, partner A, B, C, how much would it cost you to deliver this for a customer? And we've averaged it out and we've added an integration cost. So the number you'll see here is New Zealand dollars with integration costs included. So for based on 500 users, if you were using a remote desktop server-based delivery method, $851 New Zealand to deliver this desktop versus just over $1,200 for a VDI desktop. And as you can see, people always say Citrix is expensive. We are not the most expensive option in each of those bits. So these are assuming, you know, standard Microsoft pricing. So based on any enterprise agreement you have with Microsoft or whatever discount levels you have with, you know, any of your hardware vendors, these prices will obviously vary. So probably the important thing to note is we've got that pricing calculator, which is, again, 18 months worth of work building a spreadsheet where you can plug your own numbers in and it'll tell you what the costs are per user. So as I said, based on 500 users, this is the hardware, the software, the integration costs required to deliver this low-cost option. So, you know, a lot of customers looking at PC refresh, you know, if you're going to spend $1,000 buying a new hardware, well, you can spend $1,200 or $800 a user giving them a new desktop. It just happens to be a virtual desktop rather than refreshing the endpoint. So, you know, PC refresh is a good time to look at doing this stuff, obviously. So rather than buy new PCs, keep existing PCs, make it a thin client, and, you know, connect to host infrastructure. That was a bit quick.
Yeah.
So we'll just touch on some of the collateral. As Scott mentioned, there's, you know, tons of this stuff available. You know, we've worked on creating all of these different designs. You saw there was a very hard-to-read slide that had the four different CVS options. All of that collateral is available. We're focusing here today purely on the low-cost option. There are other options coming down the line which just hasn't been finalized yet, but we're working on a rack server and a SAN-based option, which is less than 5% extra over the cost that you've seen here, but obviously gives you greater flexibility. Because you've got a SAN, you can migrate machines between hosts, whereas this option, you kind of you tie the machine or the user session to a physical host. So there's, you know, some caveats around that, but, you know, it's important to note that there's other stuff in the mix, and, you know, for 5% additional cost, you can have, you know, a full-blown enterprise solution using SANs, using some pretty cool server infrastructure. So as I mentioned, we've got all of the stuff available as a share file download, so we can come and give you the link. So please come and see us at the stand if you want the stuff. We'll flick you an email from, we'll show off a bit of technology at the same time, we'll flick you an email from our phone to share file where you can download all of this collateral. You know, like I said, it's freely available. There's solution guides, designs, the whole trip. And obviously a glossy little marketing PDF as well.
I'll show that. Should we have a look at the calculator?
Okay, let me just finish this because Microsoft told us we have to. So here's the obligatory, you know, you can find us downstairs. Please come to the stand, fill in a little registration form, drop it in the box. We do a draw on Friday for a $500 Visa gift card. And we got some toys that we will have no liability for should you break anything. They're a little pull, little kid's toy that you can pull and break ceiling lights, which we've done. So please just take care when you use those toys. There's an eval form. That's one thing Microsoft didn't tell me is how you fill in your eval forms. Does anyone know? Okay, cool. I thought so.
Just vibes, I think.
Yeah. It's online? Okay, because I didn't see anything on your chairs. So yeah, please fill in your evaluation form. Microsoft have asked us to tell you that. And then obviously Microsoft are drawing prizes throughout the 3 days as well. So has anyone got any questions in the meantime while we flick over to the calculator? So Scott will kind of bring up the calculator in Excel and kind of show you how we did this modeling, just, you know, so you see there's no smoke and mirrors. No questions so far? Citrix Profile Manager. So all of that's in the design. So the login VSI scripts that we use, you know, all these PowerShell scripts for setting up, you know, the storage spaces stuff, all of that is all in the design. So everything you need to get this, you know, you can, I don't want to say give it to a dummy, but you could give it to someone, you know, pretty amateur, and they could, you know, risk avoid.
So factored into the pricing and into that kind of control fabric, those initial two pods, is a Windows server to look after DFS shares, and then we sit Citrix Profile Manager behind those.
Right, do you want to flip?
Yeah, let's see if I can do
I just
this.
Get rid of the...
Do you have to close?
I'll just... There we go. So, yeah, it could be pretty hard to read.
Yeah, I think that could almost... Is that impossible to read?
No, it should be fine.
Okay. So it's not sexy in any way, and that's a good thing because that means our consultants did it and not our marketing people. Trust me, that is a good thing. So you can see here in this initial worksheet, we've got all of the inputs. So we've modeled there... you know, the various CVS options, and we've got some pricing from the vendors. We've basically put in no discount for anything. The good thing is about it is that it's sort of a, I'm not sure what the technical term is, but it's a living spreadsheet. So if you enter in your negotiated discount levels with a certain vendor, then that'll just factor itself through into the pricing outputs. What you can also do, and I've done it myself, you know, we've been looking a little bit at HP Moonshot, so I did some modeling for Moonshot. You know, we'll give you guys this piece of collateral. Once you understand how it works, you can probably start punching in other options as well, but certainly this is our CBS-based stuff. So we basically put in a bunch of these values for the hardware, and then over on this side we've got our software, and again we've assumed some discount levels there. I would suggest they're not particularly generous at all, and you could probably negotiate better than what we've got there. But that's the pricing we've used. There's a quick rundown of what type of use cases you can address with the different CVS models. Then we go through and basically we can see our consolidated outcomes from all of our inputs. And hopefully it shows for you guys, but 100 through to 2,000 users, and then across a hosted shared desktop, so a ZenApp session or a VDI desktop. So they're grouped in twos for each of the options. And we can see here, say for around about 1,000 users, that's going to be our cost per desktop. And then we can see that charted out here on this graph.
So I'll just point out the graph. So I'm sure there's always a wise guy in the audience. So those numbers you'll see are way less than what I showed you earlier. So bear in mind that these are all based in Australian dollars, and this doesn't include the integration cost. So this is basically, you know, you got to do the work yourself, or you got to find someone to do it and add those costs on top of that. So this is purely just for the hardware, the licenses from Microsoft, and the licenses from us.
Is it fair to say the integration cost came in at around about $90 to $100 per virtual desktop?
Yeah, that was cost average.
So we're obviously graphing the outputs in these spreadsheets. You can dig into specific scenarios around 500 and 1,000 virtual desktops and what the different type of computers that you're achieving, you know, hosted shared or hosted virtual desktop. The interesting one for me is amortized cost. So, is it, you know, everybody's moving towards, I guess, desktop as a service and SPLAR-based licensing. This one comes in perhaps where you've got chargeback mechanisms within the organization to sell services to other organizational units, or perhaps you're a service provider who wants to build a compute platform and then on-sell that. This will give you some idea of the, I guess, your cost, and then obviously you want to add the cream on top of that, but on a monthly basis, we've sort of modeled those prices there as well. And then we've got some of the specifics around the particular platform that we've talked about today, and some of this information will actually help you derive your bills of material for CVS. So we're talking about the different licensing. I said to you that you could patch in figures here for, say, if you did want to use some SQL, then we've accounted for that as one of the line items, and you can sort of map out how many licenses of each you'll need for a certain given amount of users, and again, derive costs from that. So this is kind of quantifying what we see in the consolidated tab. So this is part of the collateral pack, as Gav said, so we'll share this with you guys. If you're interested, you can do some of your own modeling or have a look at how we've built the analytics.
Yes, I suppose the sort of the summary slide really is, you know, the fact that although we've used Cisco hardware, that part is totally optional. You know, we only use Cisco because we got a good deal in Australia buying Cisco hardware, so that's why we used it. So, you know, and the modeling that we've done in New Zealand is also using Cisco hardware based on the sort of discount that most customers in New Zealand would be expected to get buying that specific platform. But if you can get IBM, well, maybe not, but if you can get HP or Dell or any other server platform of your choice and, you know, it ends up being cheaper, then that's obviously a win for you. Mm. So I suppose the end of the day, thanks very much for the session. So we've got the session tomorrow, which you're going to hear some stuff for the first time, I can guarantee. Yeah, thanks very much. And like I said, we'll be on stand and see you for a few beers this afternoon.